welcome to a half hour of Mind Webs, short stories from the worlds of speculative fiction. This is Michael Hansen. This half hour with a Mind Web story from the book Notions Unlimited by Robert Sheckley. This is his The Language of Love. Jefferson Toms went into an auto cafe one afternoon after classes to drink coffee and study. He sat down, philosophy texts piled neatly before him, and saw a girl directing the robot waiters. She had smoky gray eyes and hair the color of a rocket exhaust. Her figure was slight but sweetly curved, and gazing at it, Toms felt a lump in his throat and a sudden recollection of autumn evening rain and candlelight. This was how love came to Jefferson Toms. Although he was ordinarily a very reserved young man, he complained about the robot's service in order to meet her. When they did meet, he was inarticulate, overwhelmed by feeling. Somehow, though, he managed to ask her for a date. The girl, whose name was Doris, was strangely moved by the stocky, black-haired young student, for she accepted at once. And then Jefferson Tom's troubles began. He found love delightful, yet extremely disturbing in spite of his advanced studies in philosophy. But love was a confusing thing, even in Tom's age, when spaceliners bridged the gaps between the worlds, disease lay dead, war was inconceivable, and just about anything of any importance had been solved in an exemplary manner. Old Earth was in better shape than ever before. Her cities were bright with plastic and stainless steel. Her remaining forests were carefully tended bits of greenery where one might picnic in perfect safety, since all beasts and insects had been removed to sanitary zoos which reproduced their living conditions with admirable skill. Even the climate of Earth had been mastered. Farmers received their quota of rain between 3 and 3:30 in the morning. People gathered at stadiums to watch a program of sunsets, and a tornado was produced once a year in a special arena as part of the World Peace Day celebration. But love was as confusing as ever, and Toms found this distressing. He simply could not put his feelings into words. Such expressions as, "I love you, I adore you, I'm crazy about you," were overworked and inadequate. They conveyed nothing of the depth and fervor of his emotions. Indeed, they cheapened them, since every stereo, every second-rate play was filled with similar words. People used them in casual conversation and spoke of how much they loved pork chops, adored sunsets, or were crazy about tennis. Every fiber of Tom's being revolted against this. Never, he swore, would he speak of his love in terms used for pork chops. But he found, to his dismay, that he had nothing better to say. So he brought the problem to his philosophy professor.
Mr. Toms, the professor said, gesturing wearily with his glasses, Mr. Toms, love, as it's commonly called, is not an operational area with us as yet. No significant work has been done in this field, aside from the so-called language of love of the Tyanian race.
Well, this was of no help. Toms continued to muse on love and think lengthily of Doris. In the long, haunted evenings on her porch, when the shadows from the trellis vines crossed her face, revealing and concealing it, Toms struggled to tell her what he felt. And since he could not bring himself to use the weary commonplaces of love, he tried to express himself in extravagances. He would say, "I feel about you the way a star feels about its planet."
"How immense."
Doris would answer, immensely flattered at being compared to anything so cosmic. That's not what I meant. The feeling I was trying to express, Doris, was more, well, for example, when you walk, I'm reminded of...
Of a what?
A doe in a forest glade.
How charming.
Oh, it wasn't intended to be charming. I was trying to express the awkwardness inherent in youth, and yet it's...
But, honey, I'm not awkward. My dancing teacher...
No, I did not mean awkward, but the essence of awkwardness is...
I understand.
But Toms knew she didn't. So he was forced to give up extravagances. Soon he found himself unable to say anything of any importance to Doris, for it was not what he meant. nor even close to it. The girl became concerned at the long, moody silences that developed between them.
Jeff, surely you can say something.
Tom's shrugged his shoulders.
Even if it isn't absolutely what you mean.
And Tom's sighed.
Please, say anything at all. I can't stand this.
Oh, Helen.
Yes?
That wasn't what I meant. Tom's relapsed into his gloomy silence. At last, he asked her to marry him. He was willing to admit that he loved her, but he refused to expand on it. He explained that a marriage must be founded upon truth, or it's doomed from the start. If he cheapened and falsified his emotions at the beginning, what could the future hold for them? Doris found his sentiments admirable, but refused to marry him.
You must tell a girl that you love her. You have to tell her 100 times a day, Jefferson, and even then it's not enough.
But I do love you. I mean to say, I have an emotion that corresponds
to...
Oh,
stop it.
In this predicament, Tom's thought about the language of love and went to his professor's office to ask about it. And the professor said,
We are told that the race indigenous to Tayana II had a specific and unique language for the expression of sensations of love. To say, I love you, was unthinkable for Tayanians. They'd use a phrase denoting the exact kind and class of love they felt at that specific moment and used for no other purpose.
Tom's nodded, and the professor continued.
Of course, developed with this language was necessarily a technique of lovemaking quite incredible in its perfection. We're told that it made all ordinary techniques seem like the clumsy pawing of a grizzly bear in heat. It is precisely what I need. Oh, it's ridiculous, Toms. The technique might be interesting, but your own is doubtless sufficient for most needs. And the language, by its very nature, can be used with only one person. To learn it impresses me is wasted energy.
Oh, labor for love is the most worthwhile work in the world since it produces a rich harvest of feelings.
I refuse to stand here and listen to bad epigrams, Mr. Toms. Why all this fuss about love?
It is the only perfect thing in this world. If one must learn a special language to appreciate it, one can do no less. And tell me, is it very far to Tayana too?
A considerable distance. And an unrewarding one, since the race is extinct.
Extinct? But why? A sudden pestilence? An invasion?
It is one of the mysteries of the galaxy.
Then, you mean the language is lost?
Not. You see, 20 years ago, an Earthman named George Veris went to Tayana and learned the language of love from the last remnants of the race. I never considered it sufficiently important to read his scientific papers.
Toms looked up Veris in the Interspatial Explorer's Who's Who and found that he was credited with the discovery of Tayana, had wandered around the frontier planets for a time, but at last had returned to deserted Tayana to devote his life to investigating every aspect of its culture. After learning this, Toms thought long and hard. The journey to Tayana was a difficult one, time-consuming and expensive. Perhaps Varys would be dead before he got there, or unwilling to teach him the language. Was it worth the gamble? Is love worth it? Toms asked himself and knew the answer. So he sold his ultra-fi, his memory recorder, his philosophy texts, and several stocks his grandfather had left him and booked passage to Krampus 4, which was the closest he could come to Tayana in a scheduled spaceway. And after all his preparations had been made, he went to Doris. When I return, I will be able to tell you exactly how much... I mean, the particular quality and class of... Doris, when I've mastered the Tayanian technique, you will be loved as no woman has ever been loved.
Do you mean that?
Well, see, the term love doesn't quite express it, but I mean something very much like it.
I will wait for you, Jeff, but please don't be too long.
Jefferson Toms nodded, blinked back his tears, clutched Doris inarticulately, and hurried to the spaceport. Within the hour, he was on his way. 4 months later, after considerable difficulties, Toms stood on Tayana, on the outskirts of the capital city. Slowly, he walked down the broad, deserted main thoroughfare. On either side of him, noble buildings soared to dizzy heights. peering inside one, Toms saw complex machinery and gleaming switchboards. With his pocket Tiana English dictionary, he was able to translate the lettering above one of the buildings. It read, Counseling Services for Stage 4 Love Problems. Other buildings were much the same, filled with calculating machinery, switchboards, ticker tapes, and the like. He passed the Institute for Research into Affection Delay, stared at the 200-story Home for the Emotionally Retarded, and glanced at several others. Slowly, the awesome, dazzling truth dawned upon him. Here was an entire city given over to the research and aid of love. He had no time for further speculation. In front of him was the gigantic General Love Services building, and out of its marble hallway stepped an old man.
Who the hell are you?
I'm Jefferson Toms of Earth, and I've come here to learn the language of love, Mr. Varys. Varys raised his shaggy white eyebrows. He was a small, wrinkled old man, stoop-shouldered and shaky in the knees, but his eyes were alert and filled with a cold suspicion.
Well, perhaps you think the language will make you more attractive to women. Don't believe it, young man. Don't believe it. Knowledge has its advantages, of course, but it has distinct drawbacks as well, as the Tyanians discovered.
What drawbacks? Varys grinned, displaying a single yellow tooth.
You wouldn't understand if you don't already know. It takes knowledge to understand the limitations of knowledge.
Nevertheless, I want to learn the language. Varys stared at him thoughtfully.
But it's not a simple thing, Toms. The language of love and its resultant technique is every bit as complex as brain surgery or the practice of corporation law. It takes work, much work, and a talent as well.
I'll do the work, and I'm sure I have the talent.
Most people think that, and most of them are mistaken. But never mind, never mind. It's been a long time since I've had any company. We'll see how you get on, Toms.
Together, they went into the General Services building, which Varys called his home. They went to the main control room, where the old man had put down a sleeping bag and set up a camp stove. And there, in the shadow of the giant calculators, Tom's lessons began. Varys was a thorough teacher. In the beginning, with the aid of a portable semantic differentiator, he taught Toms to isolate the delicate apprehension one feels in the presence of a to-be-loved person, to detect the subtle tensions that come into being as the potentiality of love draws near. These sensations, Toms learned, must never be spoken of directly, for frankness frightens love. They must be expressed in simile, metaphor, and hyperbole, half-truths and white lies. With these, one creates an atmosphere and lays a foundation for love. And the mind, deceived by its own predisposition, thinks of booming surf and raging sea, mournful black rocks and fields of green corn. Nice images, Toms said admiringly.
Those were samples. Now you must learn them all.
And so Toms went to work, memorizing great long lists of natural wonders, to what sensations they were comparable, and at what stage they appeared in the anticipation of love. The language was thorough in this regard. Every state or object in nature for which there was a response in love anticipation had been cataloged, classified, and listed with suitable modifying adjectives. When he had memorized the list, Varys drilled him in perceptions of love. Toms learned the small, strange things that make up a state of love. Some were so ridiculous that he had a laugh. The old man admonished him sternly.
Love is a serious business, Toms. You seem to find some humor in the fact that love is frequently predisposed by wind speed and direction.
It seems foolish.
There are stranger things than that.
And Varys mentioned another factor. Toms shuddered. That I can't believe. It's preposterous. Everybody knows that.
If everybody knows how love operates, why hasn't someone reduced it to a formula? Murky thinking, Toms. Murky thinking is the answer. And an unwillingness to accept cold facts. If you cannot face them...
I can face anything. I can face anything if I have to. Let's continue. As the weeks passed, Toms learned the words which expressed the first quickening of interest, shade by shade, until an attachment is formed. He learned what that attachment really is in the three words that express it. This brought him to the rhetoric of sensation, where the body becomes supreme. Here, the language was specific instead of elusive and dealt with feelings produced by certain words and, above all, by certain physical actions. A startling little black machine taught Toms the 38 separate and distinct sensations which the touch of a hand can engender. And he learned how to locate that sensitive area no larger than a dime, which exists just below the right shoulder blade. He learned an entirely new system of caressing which caused impulses to explode and even implode along the nerve paths and to shower colored sparks before the eyes. He was also taught the social advantages of conspicuous desensitization. He learned many things about physical love which he had dimly suspected, and still more things which no one had suspected. It was intimidating knowledge. Toms had imagined himself to be at least an adequate lover. Now he found that he knew nothing, nothing at all, and that his best efforts had been comparable to the love play of amorous hippopotami.
"But what else should you expect?"
Laris asked.
"Good lovemaking, Toms, calls for more study, more sheer intensive labor than any other acquired skill. Do you still wish to learn?"
Definitely. Why, when I'm an expert on lovemaking, I can...
"That is of no concern of mine. Let's return to our lessons."
Next, Toms learned the cycles of love. Love, he discovered, is dynamic, constantly rising and falling and doing so in definite patterns. There were 52 major patterns, 306 minor patterns, 4 general exceptions, and 9 specific exceptions. Toms learned them better than his own name. He acquired the uses of the tertiary touch, and he never forgot the day he was taught what a bosom really was like. "But I can't say that," Toms objected, appalled.
"It's true, isn't it?"
Laris insisted. "No, yes, I suppose it is, but it's unflattering."
"So it seems, but examine, Toms. Is it actually unflattering?"
And Toms examined and found the compliment that lies beneath the insult. And so he learned another facet of the language of love. Soon he was ready for the study of the apparent negations. He discovered that for every degree of love, there is a corresponding degree of hate, which is, in itself, a form of love. He came to understand how valuable hate is, how it gives substance and body to love, and how even indifference and loathing have their place in the nature of love. Laris gave him a 10-hour written examination, which Toms passed with superlative marks. He was eager to finish, but Laris noticed that a slight tick had developed in his student's left eye and that his hands had a tendency to shake.
"You need a vacation, Toms."
You may be right. Suppose I go to Cythera 5 for a few weeks. Now, Laris, who knew Cythera's reputation, smiled cynically.
Eager to try out your new knowledge,
Well, why not? Knowledge is to be used.
Only after it's mastered.
But I have mastered it. Couldn't we call it field work? A thesis, perhaps?
No thesis is necessary.
But, damn it all, I should do a little experimentation. I should find out for myself how all this works, especially approach 33CV. It sounds fine in theory, but I've been wondering how it works in actual practice. There's nothing like direct experience, you know, to reinforce.
Did you journey all this way to become a super seducer?
No, of course not, but a little experimentation wouldn't...
Your knowledge of the mechanics of sensation would be barren unless you understand love as well. You've progressed too far to be satisfied with mere thrills.
Tom's searching his heart knew this to be true, but he set his jaw stubbornly. "I'd like to find out that for myself, too."
You may go, then. You may go, but don't come back. No one will accuse me of loosing the callous scientific seducer upon the galaxy.
"Oh, all right, to hell with it. Let's get back to work."
"No, look at yourself. A little more unrelieved studying, young man, and you will lose the capacity to make love. And wouldn't that be a sorry state of affairs?"
Toms agreed that it would certainly be.
I know the perfect spot for relaxation from the study of love.
So they entered the old man's spaceship and journeyed 5 days to a small, unnamed planetoid. When they landed, the old man took Toms to the bank of a swift-flowing river, where the water ran fiery red with green diamonds of foam. The trees that grew on the banks of that river were stunted and strange and colored vermilion. Even the grass was unlike grass, for it was orange and blue. How alien.
This is the least human spot I've found in this humdrum corner of the galaxy, and believe me, I've done some looking.
Tom stared at him, wondering if the old man was out of his mind. But soon he understood what Varys meant. For months he had been studying human reactions and human feelings, and surrounding it all was the now suffocating feeling of soft human flesh. He had immersed himself in humanity, studied it, bathed in it, eaten and drunk and dreamed it. It was a relief to be here, where the water ran red and the trees were stunted and strange and vermilion and the grass was orange and blue, and there was no reminder of Earth. Toms and Varys separated, for even each other's humanity was a nuisance. Toms spent his days wandering along the river edge, marveling at the flowers that moaned when he came near them. At night, three wrinkled moons played tag with each other, and the morning sun was different from the yellow sun of Earth. At the end of a week, refreshed and renewed, Toms and Varys returned to Jigel, the Tyanian city dedicated to the study of love. Toms was taught the 506 shades of love proper, from the first faint possibility to the ultimate feeling, which is so powerful that only 5 men and 1 woman have experienced it. And the strongest of them survived less than 1 hour. Under the tutelage of a bank of small interrelated calculators, he studied the intensification of love. He learned all of the 1,000 different sensations of which the human body is capable, and how to augment them, and how to intensify them until they became unbearable, and how to make the unbearable bearable, and finally, pleasurable, at which point the organism is not far from death. After that, he was taught some things which have never been put into words, and with luck, never will. One day, Varys said,
"And that is everything."
"Everything?"
"Yes, Toms. The heart has no secrets from you, nor, for that matter, has the soul or mind or the viscera. You have mastered the language of love. Now, return to your young lady."
"Oh, I will. I will. At last, she'll know."
"Drop me a postcard. Let me know how you're getting on."
"Yeah, I'll do that," Toms promised fervently. He shook his teacher's hand and departed for Earth. At the end of the long trip, Jefferson Toms hurried to Doris's home. Perspiration beaded his forehead and his hands were shaking. He was able to classify the feeling as stage 2 anticipatory tremors with mild masochistic overtones, but that didn't help. This was his first field work, and he was nervous. Had he mastered everything? He rang the bell. Doris opened the door, and Tom saw that she was more beautiful than he had remembered, her eyes smoky gray and misted with tears, her hair the color of a rocket exhaust, her figure slight but sweetly curved. He felt again the lump in his throat and sudden memories of autumn, evening, rain, and candlelight. I'm back.
Oh, Jeff.
Toms simply stared, unable to say a word.
"It's been so long, Jeff, and I kept wondering if it was all worth it. Now I know."
You know?
"Yes, my darling. I waited for you. I'd wait 100 years or 1,000. I love you, Jeff."
She was in his arms.
"Now tell me, Jeff. Tell me."
And Toms looked at her and felt and sensed, searched his classifications, selected his modifiers, checked and double-checked, and after much searching and careful selection and absolute certainty and allowing for his present state of mind and not forgetting to take into account climatic conditions, phases of the moon, wind speed and direction, sunspots, and other phenomena which have their due effect upon love, he said, "Oh, my dear, I am rather fond of you."
Surely you can say more than that. The language of love.
Doris, the language of love is damnably precise. I'm sorry, but the phrase, I am rather fond of you, expresses precisely what I feel.
Oh, Jeff.
Yes?
Oh, damn you, Jeff.
There was, of course, a painful scene and a very painful separation. Tom's took to traveling. He held jobs here and there, working as a riveter at Saturn Lockheed, a wiper on the Helg Vinovsky trader, a farmer for a while on a kibbutz on Israel 4. He bummed around the inner Dalmian system for several years, living mostly on handouts. And then at Novosibirsk, he met a pleasant brown-haired girl, courted her, and in due course married her and set up housekeeping. Their friends say that the Tomses are tolerably happy, although their home makes most people uncomfortable. It's a pleasant enough place, but the rushing Red River nearby makes people edgy. And who can get used to vermilion trees and orange and blue grass and moaning flowers and three wrinkled moons playing tag in the alien sky? Tom's likes it, though, and Mrs. Tom's is, if nothing else, a flexible young lady. Tom's wrote a letter to his philosophy professor on Earth, saying that he had solved the problem of the demise of the Tyanian race, at least to his own satisfaction. The trouble with scholarly research, he wrote, is the inhibiting effect it has upon action. The Tyanians, he was convinced, had been so preoccupied with the science of love, after a while they just didn't get around to making any. And eventually he sent a short postcard to George Veris. He simply said that he was married, having succeeded in finding a girl for whom he felt quite a substantial liking. And Varys growled after reading the card.
Oh, lucky devil. Vaguely enjoyable was the best I could ever find.
Robert Sheckley's book, Notions Unlimited, published by Bantam, that was The Language of Love. I'm Michael Hansen. The part of Doris was played by Star Eyes. Technical operation for this broadcast by Marsha Phillips. Mindwebs is a production of WHA Radio in Madison, a service of University of Wisconsin Extension.